At this time on a Thursday, I think it's time we get our view from the north. Covering the Blazers, little Seahawks, little Ducks for the Oregonian. On Twitter, use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are things with you and yours as we now are officially in the middle of October?
Things are good, man. Just, coming down from my many bouts over LeBron versus Jordan. It was a bloody couple days, but, I watched the movie 300 a couple times to get pumped up for it. And I feel like I made a lot of kills, so, yeah.
Yeah, there's Fentress versus Twitter. There's Ali Frazier. There's, the legendary trilogy of bouts in our sports lives. In the wake of the announcement that the Rockets general manager, Daryl Morey, is leaving, and your theory that they might break up the band, it may be hard.
Well, it's a loose theory.
I understand, but that's the fun part about it, because it's not concrete. So if you drink in what you were thinking and the responses, I mean, what would that look like? I like the key that you got to keep Nurkic for the pick and roll. Obviously, Damian's not going anywhere. So what would that look like? And again, we preface it by saying it's just wild speculation.
Right. And we don't know if they're going to dump Harden. They probably could try to just rebuild around Harden. But I've said it, numerous people have said it, they got to get somebody at some point, and whenever someone is in a situation where the team may or may not be looking to move them, but it looks like there at least a lot of change going on. They lost their coach, they lost their GM, so who knows what the new GM is going to want to do. You got to wonder, can Portland get that guy? And the only position that's off, limits would be adding another point guard. That would make sense. Now, Harden does technically play a lot of point guard, but he is naturally a two guard. So I think you'd have to ask the question, could Portland get him? What would they have to give up? And I think it depends on what Houston's goal would be. Like, if you're giving up Harden, you're basically starting over, I would think. And so I don't even know if they'd want McCollum. And some people are saying, Philly could maybe looking to move Ben Simmons. So would they rather have Simmons than McCollum? Well, again, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to rebuild on the fly or tank it a little bit and try and get some draft picks? You don't want Ben Simmons, because he's going to keep you relevant. He's going to keep you outside of the top 10, in the lottery. Same thing maybe with McCollum, if you had some decent pieces around him, plus McCollum has a huge contract. So I would say, if in all reality, if they were trying to start over, it's draft picks, and you got to hope they love some of your young pieces. You got to hope they love Simons, Trent, and maybe Collins, and then draft picks. Then you throw in Ariza for salary purposes and Hood or whatever. Now, if they want McCollum, I think you definitely have to move McCollum. Now, I know McCollum is a well-loved player in Portland, but Harden's better, and a duo of Lillard and Harden gets you closer to winning.
Yeah, and of course it's all theory at this point.
It's not just made up. He's not on the block. There's no trade rumors. Literally, just me just going, hey. What if?
That's what we do. We pass time.
Exactly.
And occasionally we aggravate people, so that's always just a bonus. As far as the Ducks and college football in general, I've heard people, especially in Pac-12 country, they're all worried about, oh my God, is the Pac-12 going to be overlooked for the playoff? And I'm like, look, just college football takes care of a lot of problems by everybody loses in a conference. You're only going to come out with one unbeaten. So are you of the opinion that, hey, whether it's Oregon, USC, I don't know if it's Cal, wins all sixth and looks impressive and is unbeaten, of course they'll be considered by the committee, don't you think?
Yeah, one of my biggest pet peeves about college football, and this is what college football wants, is everyone talking about it and talking about who's going to be in it, right? And it's just annoying because it's all going to settle itself out. So why worry about 15 teams, which one's going to get in, which five or four are going to get in? Wait till you get down to, only five and worry about, which four out of five are going to get in. But to start it now, you know, start complaining and worrying about it now when the Pac-12 hasn't played a game yet, it's just even more lunacy to me, right? I still can't see a team from the Pac-12 going undefeated. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think anyone's going to go 7-0. This has been way too crazy of an offseason. You know, USC has some pieces and talent, but it's USC. They haven't been consistent. I mean, they had one big year with Darnold, but they didn't make the playoffs. But, you know, since basically since Carroll, the Ducks were the favorite to win the conference, just lost like 8 or 9 NFL guys. I mean, that's a lot of guys. I don't care how well they've been recruiting. That's a lot of guys. And this is a team that last year, with all of those NFL guys, you know, lost the Auburn game they barely lost and the AFC game they barely lost. And it was only 2 losses, but the point is they lost to Arizona State. They almost lost to Washington State at home. I think there's one other close call as well. The Oregon State game, that performance wasn't good. So that's not a team to me that I think is going to go 7-0 necessarily. So why worry about it now? Worry about it when, you know, Oregon's 5-0. You know, worry about it when Oregon goes to the Pac-12 title game at 6-0. That's when you should worry about it. But I will say this. The problem for Oregon and for USC is that even if you're 7-0, I still believe that in some of these other teams, if they go 8-1, you know, I think 8-1 gets in over 7-0. I think the Pac-12 is going to be hurt by only playing 7 games max for the champion. Even if they're 7-0. So yeah, I think that's going to be the thing that puts them up against the wall.
No, I agree, but I also think that you could see the mayhem happening already, and it's not just exclusive to this conference.
Correct.
You know, speaking of NFL players, you posted a piece Tuesday, I think, about Penei Sewell, and you spoke with Jeff Schwartz, Kyle Long, who is an interesting case. You know, he played here not even a full year and ended up going 13th overall, and of course, Penei really played a year and a half. So start with Long, who, like I said, is similar in making that kind of impact on NFL scouts in a limited time. What does he have to say about Sewell?
Yeah, so I thought it'd be cool to go back and talk to those three former Ducks and pro Ducks and just sort of get their take on how good this guy is. Because, you know, offensive line is one of those positions where, I mean, yeah, if you sat there and just focused on the left tackle, you'd be like, wow, that guy's, you know, blocking people. Right? But how many people really do that? So, you know, to move away from the hype that you hear and just get three guys who've been, you know, at that position or at least close to that position in the trenches and what do they think? And all three were just like, oh, my God, he's amazing. it was like they just could not contain themselves and how much they talked about how good he was. And one of my, you know, the favorite parts of that article was sort of showing how, you know, Schwartz had the massive size, 6'7", 330, right? Tyler had more finesse and had more agility. But even if you added those two together to create the so-called perfect offensive lineman, that person still wouldn't touch Sewell because Sewell, same size as Schwartz, but built differently. Schwartz was pretty doughy in college, whereas Penei looks like he could actually use, you know, add a few more pounds, especially from the waist down. And then Tyler, as athletic as he was nowhere near as athletic as Sewell. So that's how good he is. And then you compare him to Long. Long, the scout told me, was a better athlete coming out. Like, he remembers seeing Long in person and thinking, my God, he's more athletic than some of our tight ends, right, at 330. But Long didn't have the polish of offensive lineman because he only played 1 year at Oregon. Prior to that, he was at Saddleback, I think, and then he was a pitcher at Florida State. So the combination of his athleticism, his tenacity, his strength, his build, and his commitment and work ethic should make him, you know, a future Hall of Famer. Now, the scout said is by far, like, the best tackle he's scouted since Jonathan Ogden coming out of UCLA in the 90s. And that's saying a lot because there's been a lot of good – sorry, he said on the West Coast. There's been a lot of good offensive linemen that have come out since then. And I threw out some other names that weren't West Coast guys like Walter Jones and Orlando Pace. He's like, yeah, he's in that category.
Wow.
So he's going into a league where people are feeling like this is a guy who should be, you know, 7 to 10 Pro Bowls, you know, all pro 5, maybe 6 times and heading to the Hall of Fame. Now, if you do research though on top 10 picks of the offensive line, there's a lot of guys who didn't live up to that expectation, but they just, a lot of people seem to believe that this guy is just one of those guys where unless he gets injured, there's no way he's not going to be great.
Well, I can't imagine he last passed three. But anyway, let's get to the Seahawks, talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. I tell you what, you follow the Seahawks, you don't get any breaks. You don't get to change the channel. But it's amazing. With Carroll as coach, Wilson as quarterback, and a leader like Bobby Wagner on the defense, it's amazing that they just find a way. They've got injuries. They got shortcomings. So how amazing or just impressive is it that they've actually found a way to win them all?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because one of the arguments for the let Russ cook thing was, well, then we won't have to win games late. Yeah, that's not happening. You're having to win games late. Right? Yeah. It doesn't always necessarily work out that way. I thought what Minnesota was doing was pretty amazing because it just showed how if you can run the ball on somebody, you know, and you can play some defense early, you can shorten the game. They were into the second quarter, late in the second quarter, and the Seahawks only had the ball like twice or maybe three times. They really shortened that thing and had a chance to win it with the run game. It's amazing, though, that you know, after they ran all over Seattle, they couldn't get 1 yard. I still maintain that they ran to the 4 hole and the 6 hole was clearly wide open. I can't believe they didn't check the 6 hole. I can't believe the back didn't cut to the 6 hole. But whatever, they didn't make the play, and then Wilson answers. But what we're seeing is a mediocre defense and a quarterback who's just on fire with a receiver who looks like he is going to be a just devastating monster to this league and make a lot of teams regret not taking him and letting him go to the end of the second round. But, you know, it's one of those things where Carroll's philosophy has always been, you know, let's run the ball, shorten the game, play defense, you know, let Wilson win it if he needs to. And now they're like, we're just going to air it out. We're going to throw on early downs. And what's happening is they're scoring most of the time, but they're also putting their defense out there a lot, and their defense is getting scored on. So you're still getting close games, just different types of scores, and they're able to pull them out. But, you know, here's the caveat to this entire thing. They're 5-0, but they're like four plays away from being 2-3.
Yep.
That's real. Like, you know, they're 1 yard away from losing the Minnesota game. They're 2 yards away from losing the Patriot game. And that's just fact. So it's still precarious because if they play a team that plays better defense and can run and control and has a good quarterback, they easily could lose that game. So we'll see how it goes moving forward. I like the Rams that division still. The 49ers are a mess. So I really feel like between the Rams and the Seahawks to win that division, then we'll see what happens from there.
Couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress. We talked in the offseason about adding kind of a third receiver or a more consistent threat alongside Metcalf and Lockett, and you like Dorsett, and of course he got hurt. Then now David Moore, he's had some moments. He had a huge TD catch in both the Patriot and Miami game. So it seems like he's coming along. What do you make of his contribution, I guess, as the number three right now?
Yeah, I actually wrote a long piece about him last offseason, two offseasons ago. Undrafted guy, maybe seventh round pick, maybe seventh round pick, D2 guy. He's one of these guys who, you know, there wasn't that polish coming in, but I mean, when you look at him, he's a pretty good size, you know, 6'2", 210 or whatever. Very athletic, not elite speed, but definitely fast. And if he's your number three, you're doing pretty well. Because now he's got, I think, at least the fourth year. So he's got a lot of experience under his belt. So if he ends up being the guy, because Dorsett's not going to be around, we'll see what happens there, then I think you're fine. And plus they have, you know, some other guys under the radar who make plays here and there. But no, David Moore, he's a good receiver. He can make acrobatic catches. The only thing I've really never seen him do much of, he's not great after the catch. And that was the one thing I was really excited about with Dorsett, because he's so fast, and see him catch, you know, those underneath crossing routes and turn that speed up the field. But no, Moore's a nice receiver, man. If he's year three, you're in good shape.
No, it is his fourth year. He was a seventh rounder, and he went to that factory known as East Central Oklahoma.
Right.
And the last thing, I guess, I mean, with a sport like football, a week off is always nice. But now with the, you know, how they're the walking wounded, plus coming back, they have three road games at Arizona, at the Rams, at the Bills, the Niners here. I mean, if timing is everything, how nice is this bye week right now?
Yeah, I mean, guys have been dropping like crazy, huh?
Yep.
That's pretty scary. you know, it was nice to see Disley make some plays the other day. I think that was by far his best game. But yeah, I mean, you know, the war of attrition is real. And the more bodies you lose, the more holes you create. And this team has holes. I mean, they're 5-0, but they're a 5-0 team that, you know, like I said, you're like, it's kind of precarious. So you got to try and, you know, keep your guys healthy as much as you can, because at some point you're just going to run out of dudes. you can't plug in the janitor, can't plug in the cook. You know, you got to have players. So hopefully they can stop these injuries.
All right. Mr. Fentress, always my pleasure. On Twitter, it's at Aaron J. Fentress, working for the Oregonian. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the week. And we'll talk to you next week, as now we're counting down to college football season, man. So always appreciate the time, my friend. Have a good one.
All right, man. Take care.
Take it easy.